Hi, this is Helen, and thank you for joining me for a cup of teal. Teal is shorthand for the future of work. It means bringing your whole self to work, a focus on purpose and self-management. And this podcast is a chat over a cup of tea with the people who are making this happen in health, care, and public services. Stories of self-management in action. Michelle was my right-hand woman in phase one of wellbeing teams during our 2 years in Wigan. She started as team coach and then became wellbeing leader. We learnt so much about self-management, we had to rewrite the handbook 6 times. Here she shares some of our self-managing practices, what she's proud of, and what else we need to be doing. Here we are, having a cup of tea and talking self-management. I'm with Michelle, and we've been having a conversation about what we're proud of in relation to self-management in phase one of wellbeing teams and where we still think we've got to develop. So Michelle's our lead for self-management overall. Hi, Michelle. What are you most pleased about that we've achieved over the last 2 years?
I think the thing for me is some of the structures that we use that kind of support self-management, because self-management isn't about just giving people a blank page and asking people to go and invent what they do. It's having a really supportive structure that holds people safe. And one of the ways that we do this is in team meetings. And in phase one, we've been having weekly team meetings where the team come together and kind of work through what needs to happen. And there are different ways that we do it. So we have a meeting structure that comes from Holacracy, and also a little from positive and productive meetings as well. So we encourage people to kind of bring the whole self to work within that, but also to name what they need in order to do their best work. I absolutely believe that the team meetings are the beating heart of self-management, and I've seen lots and lots of great things happen as a result of that. Not just about supporting people to live well at home in their community, but also to support teams to feel much more empowered, to take control of situations, to feel that they can use their initiative, and to feel like that they don't have to rely on other people to do some of the hard or work or decision making. So I think the team meetings has been one of our huge successes.
And it was also something that the inspectors were impressed with at our inspection back in January, because they sat in one of the team meetings. And for people who don't know the structure that we use, would you talk people through step by step what happens when you come into the team meeting room? Because we've introduced a new check-in board, didn't we, with smiley faces and meh faces.
Yeah, so we've introduced a check-in board, which did take a little while to get off the ground, but actually that's working really well. And basically what we're doing is we're finding out where people are at. So it might, so on the board it will say, I'm doing great, I'm doing okay, I'm struggling, I need to talk to somebody. And people will simply put a post-it note with their initials on that, and it helps people to kind of think about where they're at, where their current reality is with that. Helps us to think about stress, and who maybe we might want to follow things up with. And it's a real good indicator of kind of overall team morale as well. Then we'll come in, and we have 2 ways of then checking in. So it's really important to get people talking right at the beginning of a team meeting, because you're likely to get their best contribution from doing that. So we have 2 ways of doing that. We can either just do a, where are you now? How are you doing? Is there anything that we need to talk about just so that you're fully present at the meeting? Or we ask people to share what's going well for them at work and at home, so that we're starting with a sense of celebration. So that's how we start. Then we will do a minute of mindfulness, and we really want people to be present within the meeting. So we have a guide. So in some teams that's guided, so the facilitator will play a recording, and for some people we'll just say, okay, we're starting our minute of mindfulness. Once we've done that, we look at metrics. So it's really important that teams have full information when they're making decisions. And one way of doing that is to look at what are the important things that we're measuring. So we measure really important things like compliments that we've had from people, complaints, incidents, sickness, so that we're looking at well-being. So there are a whole range of things that we measure, and we check in with the team on the metrics each week. We then look at, we have some posters, basically two posters. If we've got new team members, people who are in probation, we have a poster that says whether they're on track, a bit off track or off track, which helps us to think about what it helps them to think about what they need and helps us to be able to prioritise figuring out how to give them what they need. And we have an equivalent board for the people we support. So every person we support has a link wellbeing worker. And what they do as they come in is they'll put a post-it note with the person's name on, again saying, is this person on track at living well at home, a bit off track or off track? If they're a bit off track or off track, what we will see is that actions will arise as a result of that to try to get them back on track. We do that, and they often create quite a lot of the agenda. We'll check in on the any actions that have been completed from the last team meeting as well. That's not a discussion. That's simply a check or no check, knowing that if somebody hasn't done something, we'd be expecting them to raise that as attention as to what's going on or do they need anything extra. Then we invite people to raise tensions. And a tension is something that may be getting in the way of us doing our best work. Or it might be a sensed possibility, so something we could do better, an idea that we're not quite there. So we invite people to raise tensions. They won't talk about the what the tension is. They'll just give us like a coat hanger. So they might say training. And then when it gets to their attention, the facilitator will ask them, what do you need? And that helps people to be really succinct about figuring out what the outcome they think is that they want as a result of raising that tension. In the past, we've definitely had lots of examples of people telling a big story and still not being clear why they've raised it at a team meeting. And we want to use this time really efficiently because, as I said, it's the beating heart of what we do. It's where we do our kind of planning for the week to come or the month to come as well. Once somebody's raised their tension, ask for what they need, we check in with them and say, did you get what you need? Just so that we make sure that we're not kind of moving forward too quickly. And once we've completed the tensions, we finish with a closing round of appreciation. Basically, what have you most appreciated about the meeting, so that we're figuring out what's going well for people, what do we need to change or do differently. So that usually takes, that in itself takes about an hour and a half, but we also have over a month, there are two times, so twice in a month we will do confirmation practices as part of the team meeting, and that's half an hour of two buddies coming together, and a buddy pairing are two peers who support and challenge each other to do their absolute best work. And we work through confirmation practices, which are a series of questions based on our values and based on delivering safe and personalised services to the people we support. And they again support and challenge each other on how well they're doing, and they give themselves a score. And at the end of that, they post on our Slack channel one change that they will make within the next 2 weeks to make that difference that's needed based on their score. So twice a month we do that. Once a month we look at our results from PCOM. So it's really important that we understand how things are going from a colleague perspective. And we're really keen on figuring out how happy they are at work, and then figuring out with us what it'll do to kind of increase happiness. So once a month, the scores from the anonymous PCOM are compiled. And what we do at the team meeting is we look at the three top scores, three things that people say are going best, and the three bottom scores. scores. And again, within that half an hour, what the team are invited to do is to come up with ideas and solutions about how they can increase the bottom scores and make sure that we're celebrating the top scores as well. So we do that once a month. And then another thing that we do once a month is we look at a month's worth of compliments, concerns, complaints, and we look at the themes behind that, so, and figure out what will it take to get more compliments like this, what are we doing great at, and are there any themes that we're seeing from any complaints or accidents or incidents as well, so that the team feel in control of creating a happier and safer life for the people that they support. It's not something that managers look at, worry about somewhere locked away in an office. This is something that's a shared responsibility and accountability with the team. And you will see that then showing up in sometimes training. People might say, well, actually, we need more training on that. Or we need more pamper packs so that more people can have a massage experience. But they're part of the problem solving of what's going well as what's not going well.
So you give two examples there of information that would typically be held by the manager and used by the manager and not shared with the teams. And one is the kind of staff satisfaction surveys, but those go directly to the teams and they act on them. And the other is data that CQC requires and the local authority requires about accidents, incidents, etc., etc.
Yeah, and I think what CQC particularly liked was when each member of the team were looking at one of the things that we were looking at the meeting that they were there were any accidents or incidents, and the team were looking at that and coming up with why they thought these things might be happening. Did they think there was a pattern around anybody that we needed to kind of liaise them with our external supports, like actually did this require a district nurse call, or did we want to look at falls prevention in a different way? But again, it helps them feel like this is part of them keeping people safe and happy at home as well, not that it's somebody else's business.
Absolutely, it's their responsibility and they're acting on the information they need. Slack's the other area where you talk about being able to see self-management happening live. Could you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, so Slack has more than one role, I think. So I think as a home care worker in particular, it can feel like a very isolating, lonely role with huge responsibilities. And I think that's why in traditional home care settings, the manager is always there and, at the back of a phone and gets utilised an awful lot. I think what we think is actually, if we know that person well and we're working really closely with them, we should be able to figure out with that person what we need to do, as long as we've had the right training, the right support, and given the the autonomy to do that. So it helps in terms of that. But actually, when you look at Slack, Slack works in a way that how people are working becomes really visible. And so for each person that we support, they each have a channel, and their regular workers record on that channel. So you find the really simple things on there, like Jane's run out of milk, Helen, you're the next person, will you make sure you pick up a bottle on your way? So really practical, lovely things like that happen. But also things like, actually, I've been worried about Jim's mood lately. He seems very low and he's increasingly confused. Could we make sure that we're really monitoring this over the next day or so? So it really helps with that. But it also helps with people self-managing their own lives. So only today I've seen somebody put on, I've got a meeting that I want to go to on Friday. I'm on my normal morning shift. Can anybody swap with me in the evening? They just do that between themselves, which is good. But one of the things that was really great was one of our workers called Lynn had transferred over from another organisation who delivered adult social care. And I think that can be quite a hard transition when you come from a very management focused approach to a self-managing, organise this yourself approach. And one of the things that she raised at a team meeting as attention was that it really threw her when people within the team had been, and she didn't know they'd been for the person that she was supporting, and actually she didn't know to pick, you know, if there was something she needed to pick up or be aware of to talk to the person with. And she said, well, why don't we have, and we support people if they've got a gap in their rota, to figure out who needs extra support. So is somebody particularly lonely? Actually, if you've got a gap in your rota, wouldn't it be great to go and spend some time talking about history with them? Or such a body, we've all been a bit worried about such a body, they came up on the off-track board. So if anybody's got a gap, can we just make sure that we get in touch or we go and see them as well? And she said that was really lovely, but it really threw her when people that she supported said such a body been, and they didn't always remember why that was, etc. So she suggested creating an unscheduled visits channel. And actually what that's done is it's not just informing people who's going where, but again, it shows us how people are responding to the Living Well Board. Mm-hmm. It gives us great quotes for quality, helps us to see where people are going just to help people around outcomes. So somebody's we support called Keith, one of his outcomes was to get on top of his garden and feel like he could enjoy it again. And one of his workers regularly, she's got a gap, goes and helps him with the painting of the fence and things like that. So that was a great thing that actually came from people feeling liberated at the meetings to raise how we could do something better or differently. Mm-hmm. But again, it's a great tool for kind of us seeing what's happening, seeing how people are organising themselves and feeling involved in that.
And I know that we're really conscious of confidentiality of information and that people's individual channels are just done with their initials. My favourite channel on Slack is the Moments channel. Explain why we use that and how we use it.
So one of our kind of principles is to give people joy, bring fun into their lives and make their day. So one of the things that we have on our support plans is what can we do to give somebody a good day? And this channel is a way of capturing some of those moments. Now, we don't have any more time in home care and we don't have any more money. But what we do have is the ability to use our initiative to ramp up that visit, to actually make the most out of it. And one of the things that we want to do is make sure that we create a culture where people celebrate what's going well and that can get used to motivate others as well. So the memorable moments is around figuring out how can we, so you might have a half hour visit, how can we transform that visit while still completing the commissioned outcomes to do that in a way that person thinks, God, that was the best visit of the day. That really made my day. Did we make somebody's day? So we encourage people when they do that and they are able to use the initiative to take a photo if the person's given permission and to share something on the Moments channel. And not only do we get really great examples of good and innovative practice, opportunities of testing things out, what works and doesn't work, but what that does do is what you see is a spin-off of that is that other people, once they see something lovely has happened, feel elevated themselves by that. So other workers are giving feedback to that worker who's done something brilliant, saying well done, or that's lovely, or that made my day just seeing that. But also it's inspiring them to think, oh, so what can I do next time I'm in there? Or, oh, I know that big band music works for Alice. I'm going to make sure I've got a supply of that now on my phone. So it really informs practice. And sometimes using Moments as meant that we change the support plan as well. We add something significant to it so that it becomes embedded in the practice, not just something that we did when we had a good idea.
So it's also a great place for testing out ideas and seeing what works for people. Now, I know over the last year or two, you have also taken the wellbeing leader role in some of the teams, and Slack's an opportunity for coaching and spotting coachable moments, isn't it? How have you used that as a wellbeing leader?
I think in different words. So one of the things that we do practice is compassionate communication. So if we're going to be successful in self-managing, it's absolutely critical that team members feel equipped and confident to give feedback. But how we give feedback is really critical as well. So if I'm given feedback in a way that I feel like I need to defend myself, I've probably only heard how it's been given rather than, you know, what needs to change. So everybody who works with us gets training in compassionate communication, and that gives them a frame to give feedback in, and that's good. Now, sometimes on Slack, what you'll see is, oh, actually, we could have used compassionate communication a little bit more thoughtfully in order to share that information. So Slack is an opportunity to coach people. So if we see that, you'd make a judgment on, actually, is that a general little bit of feedback that we give about how that coaching could have been done differently? Or we might direct message somebody, or we might raise it as attention at the team meeting in order to do that. But again, it gives you a real sense of what's going on around there. And I think critically, sometimes when the communication on Slack doesn't feel as compassionate as we would like it to be, that can also give you an insight into how stressed somebody is, or if they're struggling with something as well. So it's really useful way of testing out how people are feeling as well as how they're communicating as well.
And one of the things that we've decided to introduce about 6 months ago was different themes, so that we would, I remember the teams voting on looking at mental health being the first one, and we co-designed 4 weeks of a 15-minute session with our co-production partners around that. And we also worked with Emily, who's our lead on compassionate communication, about how we can use team meetings to practice that. Now, we've not been able to bed that as much as we've hoped, but I know that Oxfordshire are looking at the compassionate communication month this month. What else do you think we could be doing in the future to take self-management to the next level? Because we've made some great progress, but we know there's so much more to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, I think I'm really pleased with how we train or coach people in the elements of self-management. So if we use compassionate communication as one of those, but what I think that we can do better to ramp that up is to make sure that we have opportunities to practice that. I think giving and receiving feedback is so much easier said than done, and being trained in it is a step, but actually really thinking about practice and building into our structure a practice model, I think is something that will help us deliver that better. And I think decision making as well is something that actually anybody in a kind of support team. So when I was a wellbeing leader, I knew things weren't going so well when suddenly I was making decisions, and where maybe, from, crisis, stress, whatever was going on, that actually I needed to revisit actually what does good decision making that feels that the teams are making it look like. So every decision that I'm making that's outside of my role, because obviously I do make some decisions within my role, but if I'm making decisions outside of my role that the team could be making, then things aren't going as well as they could. So I think ramping that up and making sure that wellbeing leaders get really well supported around making sure who makes what decisions is something that I think will help us to evolve around self-management.
Absolutely. We want to be asking, and we've started to do this a little bit, asking wellbeing leaders on a weekly basis, have you made any decisions this week? To which the right answer is no, unless there's exceptional circumstances, but keeping reinforcing that our role is to support and coach, and we need to have a very good reason and exceptional circumstances for us to be involved in decisions. Thank you. And I believe you're going on some training in December to help us take self-management further?
I am. At the beginning of my journey and our journey in the team around self-management, we did some training. I'm saying a little bit of training. It's one of the hardest things. It was like doing an A-level, a crash course to do an A-level on holacracy. And again, to ramp up how we deliver this, we are both going on 4-day holacracy training in December, which I'm looking forward to.
So we're both qualified practitioners with holacracy, and that was an exam, was it 85% or something really, really high? Yeah. But now we're going to learn how to become holacracy coaches specifically so that we can deepen our understanding and practice about how to coach and support teams to move in this direction. Thank you. Let's touch base after that training. Thank you, Michelle.
Thanks, Helen.
All Although Michelle and I have been immersed in self-management for over 4 years now, first of all with HSA and now with wellbeing teams, it still feels like there's so much to learn, so much exciting avenues to explore, and becoming Holacracy coaches is part of that. So I'm really looking forward to both the training and what it means we can take forward in wellbeing teams and other organisations. Thank you for listening. I'd love to hear your reflections. Please tweet me. I'm at Helen@WBTeams. This podcast is a companion to Open Teams. On this podcast, we share the voices and stories of pioneering organisations in health, care and public services. And on Open Teams, you can see the documents that they're using. Have a look at openteams.co.uk. And if you're interested in wellbeing teams, please come and find me on LinkedIn, where I share a weekly two-minute film, or my blog site, helensanderson.net. And finally, if you're interested in self-management and need some support along the way, I'd love to hear from you. I'm at helen@wellbeingteams.org. Thank you.